Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year, we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website at havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
The structure of the Declaration is actually a very classical structure. You begin by stating what is true. You end by actually declaring your independence. Mm-hmm. But in the middle, you got to make your case. And the case is a prudential case.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Dr. Matthew Spaulding, professor in constitutional government and dean of the Van Andel Graduate School of Government at Hillsdale College's D.C. campus. His brand new book is The Making of the American Mind, The Story of Our Declaration of Independence. We go in depth with Dr. Spaulding today about the Declaration and the making of the American mind. Dr. Spaulding, thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you, Scott.
It is a pleasure to talk to you, and especially around the release of this great new book. It's about the Declaration. You ask a question or make a point early on that I wanted to start with. And your earlier book is called We Still Hold These Truths. And in it, you say you're falling back in love with the country. And in this book, you talk about the keys to developing a thoughtful and passionate love of country. How should we approach that?
That's a great question. And I intentionally start the book with that kind of that whole conversation, partially because, you know, the story of the Declaration actually is, it's a story. And the whole founding is a story. The Declaration is kind of the central scene, if you will, of this great drama of the founding. And it's really in many ways key to understanding it, which is why I get into the particulars of the book. But behind that, there's this story. And, it's not merely an academic exercise. It's not merely a past historical moment. Mm-hmm. There's something about it. There's something about the Declaration that is central to what we are, who we are, what we still are. And it's also connected to why we appreciate our country, why we defend our country. And ultimately why we love our country. And I wanted to address that very directly in the sense that idea is oftentimes criticized as being kind of, love of country is kind of this
right.
Silly patriotic chauvinism. But there's something actually more deeply profound about it that I wanted to address. And I use in that conversation a passage from Alexis de Tocqueville in Democracy America. And he makes a distinction between what he calls reflective patriotism, by which he meant kind of that thoughtful patriotism of citizens who are understanding their country, as opposed to the patriotism he would associate with pride of place. Let's say I love my state. I love
New York.
Exactly. Yeah. And he doesn't diminish that. That's important. And really, patriotism begins there when you think of a child. Right? It begins with your family, your culture, your community. And it grows outward as you learn about, say, your ancestors or the fellow down the street who fought in the war. And then history adds a component to that, and you begin to realize there's this larger tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Well, reflective patriotism gets us towards that. You have to think about it, because that tradition has something to do with how we understand today our rights and our freedoms and our liberties. But it is a form of love. Augustine talks about this in his book, The Confessions. which is you can't really love something unless you know it,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, we all know when you think of, again, children and family and things like that, or a book for that matter. You've got to know it to really love it. Well, if you want to love America, you've got to actually know it. It works both ways. And the thing we ought to love is it's people, it's history is important, but it's imperfect. There are flaws. We are flawed individuals and flawed people. But the thing we can love wholeheartedly is what it stands for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Declaration of Independence.
The prologue covers the story of how the Declaration came to be. And we could spend, and we have spent previously, at length discussing this. So set this up a little bit for us. What do we need to know as we enter the making of the American mind?
So I wanted to do that as a prologue precisely because what you've asked there. There are a number of things we need to know. There are a number of things we need to learn again, or at least learn better, shall we say. Oftentimes when we study American history, especially the founding, we think, okay, well, there's this declaration. Jefferson wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this little war, and then we wrote a constitution. We just kind of jump from step to step.
Right.
And we don't realize some things, which is there's a whole really fascinating and dynamic and actively, you know, moving history about how we came to the Declaration. And that's part of the part of the setup. The Second Continental Congress is called the Second because there was something called the First Continental Congress. The idea of a Continental Congress, a legislature of all the colonies.
Mm-hmm.
They debate at great length. What do we do? We've got this problem with the British. We don't like being taxed. And now the king is doing all these things to us. What do we do? And so it builds and builds and builds, and there are actually debates. John Adams is a crucial figure. John Dickinson from Pennsylvania is actually a brilliant thinker. In principle, he's with them, but he's more, he's concerned about what might happen. So he opposes independence. And then there's a debate about independence separate from the debate then about the Declaration itself. So part of that is just that whole history leading up to it. I think the other great important thing to understand about this kind of the setup, if you will, is Thomas Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
So Jefferson comes in. He comes in actually late into the session. He's a replacement. But he comes in with a reputation as a good writer. He's written a couple of very important pamphlets. And he is immediately put on various committees. He writes some things. He's assigned to write things. And when it comes to the motion for independence, they immediately create a committee to draft a declaration. He's one of five, Adams and Franklin being the other of the important ones. There are two other figures that were less involved. And Adams convinces Jefferson he ought to write it. Jefferson does draft the declaration. Jefferson is very important. I don't mean to say he's not important. But important, I emphasize here we have to understand the declaration was written by Jefferson as the drafter of the document. He famously uses in a later letter that the declaration is an expression of the American mind.
Yeah.
Which is actually where I get my book title, The Making of the American Mind. But Jefferson knew he was writing for a purpose,
mm-hmm.
for the Continental Congress. It's edited by the committee, in particular Franklin and Adams, and then it goes to the Congress, and the Congress spends 2 days editing it. It's cut down by, I think it's 25, 30, you know, a third or so. They rearrange sentences. They add some references to, for instance, divine providence,
mm-hmm.
and the sacred judge to give it more context. So there are very important things that happen in the creation of it that we ought to understand, as opposed to this notion that, like, you know, the Greek gods just kind of popping out of Zeus's head. It wasn't that.
Yeah. Dr. Matt Spaulding with us. His new book is The Making of the American Mind. The very first chapter, you differentiate between two different meanings or dual meaning of the word independence. So how should we consider that word?
For one thing, we refer to this document as the Declaration of Independence. But I was struck by the fact that the word independence never actually occurs in the document. Indeed, the title Declaration of Independence is something that's added, and so it's a popularization, if you will, mm-hmm. right? It's a declaration of the Continental Congress.
Uh-huh.
Declaration is important. The word independence is important, right? Later on, it refers to independence, these independent states. And, you know, why is that? And you start kind of thinking through these questions. One of the things I do in the book is kind of really kind of closely examine the text itself and what do we know about the use of words and what do they mean, what's the history behind them. And by 1776, independence has come to mean two things. And the duality of that meaning is actually throughout the Declaration. The immediate notion of independence is the one we think of, which was they were declaring their independence from England.
Mm-hmm.
They were separating, as it says at the very beginning of the Declaration. And then they give their reasons for separation, which is what the Declaration does. But at the same time, simultaneously, they meant independence to be the active creation of another independent entity, in this case, in a people who are declaring themselves a nation that was, being born and had to come into existence, but it's there. So by Declaration of Independence, they mean both of these things, mm-hmm. separating from England, but also at the same time creating this new thing, which is going to be an independent nation with the rights to do things that independent states may have right to. So part of as we read it, we've got to read with both those things in mind.
More in a moment with Dr. Matthew Spaulding, his brand new book, The Making of the American Mind. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
According to the Farmer's Almanac, we're getting a dry, mild winter in the western states this year, honey.
Oh, please. You say that every year. We're still getting new wiper blades. Premier Oil Change has their buy one, get one free sale, and I'm not passing that up.
But the Almanac...
The only forecast I care about is buy one, get one free. Get in the car.
At Premier Oil Change, buy one wiper blade and get the second one free now through January 7th. No appointment needed. Just cruise on in, grab a free beverage, hop on the free Wi-Fi, and earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. All while trained technicians take care of our thorough 30-point service. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palisadro at the Holiday Market Shopping Center, in Reading on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park, or in Anderson across from the Round Table Pizza. Stop making excuses and come to the home of the friendly oil change today. Your wipers will thank you.
Your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
A message from Todd with Reading Online Marketing.
Here's the truth. Your competitors aren't smarter and they aren't better. Their marketing is.
Reading Online Marketing has years of experience and results backed by real data to put you on top. For maximum impact, ask about exclusive KCNR radio and digital marketing packages. Put your business everywhere your customers are.
We are local and can answer all your questions. Call me at 530-378-4060 or visit ReadingOnlineMarketing.com.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Alan Gordon, Coach Master Collision. She had minor damage to her rear bumper. I wrote her an estimate. Later, I received a call. The lady responsible for the damage wanted to pay for the repairs out of pocket. Her insurance agent told her a claim would raise her rates for years. With our experience in the claim process, I explained to her most insurance companies would forgive a claim if the cost was below a minimum amount. I suggested she contact her insurance agent and have them review her policy. She called back very excited. It appeared her policy did extend forgiveness. They would pay for the repairs, and she wouldn't be charged with a claim or have to pay a deductible. The accident would not cost her a thing. She was very pleased. Good thing the vehicle owner came to the right place for repairs. We all pay a lot for insurance. Choosing Coachmaster will ensure you get the most for your money. Let this experience work for you. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Join Aaron and Bill for We the People Radio, Sundays, noon until 2.
It's conservative talk radio with a liberal dose of humor. Get the whole story from experts around the world delivering facts rather than opinion.
Missed a show? Busy at noon? No problem. Listen to our free archives when you have time. No commercial interruptions or download restrictions. We the People Radio.
.us.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We're talking with Dr. Matthew Spaulding, Dean of the Van Andel Graduate School of Government at Hillsdale's Washington, D.C. campus, also author of The Making of the American Mind, a brand new book on the story of our Declaration of Independence. Dr. Spaulding,
talk about the education of the founders and the effect, the influence of the classical tradition on the American founders. What they knew, what they read, what they learned. And then you say Cicero is by far the most influential classic thinker on the American. So where do we see that influence?
Well, first of all, the broad point you're asking about, the Declaration begins with a general reference to history when in the course of human events. And so that begs the question, what do they understand to be the role of history in shaping the American mind? So I spend some time looking at that, both English history, their immediate history, but also the history going back to the ancients, the classics. And those were much more influential than I think we commonly think of. And a lot of that has to do with this guy named Cicero, the great Roman statesman Cicero. But in general, the American education system at the time of the founding was still shaped by what was the kind of the old way of education that coming out of Europe, which was still largely classical. And as a result, they learned Latin and Greek, and they studied history. And the Latin and Greek they studied drew them to the classics. So to learn Greek, what you would normally read was the Bible. It was the greatest Greek writing in history. And to learn Latin, you would overwhelmingly read Cicero, because he was the great writer of Latin, but also a great and clear writer of Latin. So Cicero is the most influential in that sense. But the broader point is the classics, especially Aristotelianism and Aristotle, which is the teacher of Cicero. And then Cicero on the laws, is thinking about laws, is highly influential to the whole British legal tradition. There's a line of thinking there that comes from the classics directly through and into the founding era. That's very important for us to understand.
Talking with Dr. Matthew Spaulding, his new book is The Making of the American Mind, The Story of Our Declaration of Independence. It's engaging to read you wrestle with some of the phrases inside the Declaration of Independence. And one you spend some time on is this phrase, the laws of nature and nature's God. What was the purpose of using that phrase in the Declaration?
Another very important phrase. It's in the first paragraph, and it's the thing they refer to as, if you will, their standard to justify their declaring independence, which, remember, you recall, has this twofold meaning. And they have a right to do this as a nation, claiming its equal status as an independent nation, according to the laws of nature and of nature's God. And a number of things come to the fore, one of which is they're saying there's a standard, there are these laws, and the laws have two groundings, laws of nature and of nature's God. It's two things, it's one thing that has two parts.
Mm-hmm.
Laws of nature is actually a phrase used throughout the tradition, by which I mean now the classical tradition, but also the Christian tradition. The laws of nature, a natural law, it's a rational tradition. But it's a rational tradition understood within this kind of classical or created order. It's, you know, there's a long tradition of that. And then this laws of nature's God reminds us that the references to God, of which there are several, four, strikingly, in the Declaration, this is the first one, there's a God of nature. This is not, kind of pagan tree worship. This is meant to say that there is a God that is the lawmaker of the laws of nature. It actually is a theological reference here. And indeed, the phrase nature's God, I trace it back to Pope, the great English writer, who uses the phrase to move from the laws of nature, through the laws of nature up to nature's God. It is really a theological meaning. I think that's Jefferson's first reference which will then carry out and become even more theologically important in the Declaration.
Let's step back just a little and ask, who was the intended audience of the Declaration? There's each other, colonists, Great Britain, rest of the world, but who were they really writing this for?
That's a great question too, and here's one where I always tell my students, you read the Declaration a million times, it's quoted all the time. We usually know the more famous phrases, but go back and actually read through it. And this would be an example of that, because the audience question doesn't become clear until you actually read through the whole thing. Because at the beginning of the Declaration, it's actually not clear at all who they're talking to, and actually it's not clear at all who's writing the thing. It only becomes clear, if you will. And there, I think the question ultimately is, well, is their audience England? Well, that's who they're technically sending it to. But that doesn't seem to be sufficient. They clearly are making reference to the opinions of mankind. They have a broader audience in mind, which in the vernacular means they were laying down principles for broader consideration, including over time, then and as well as today. So they had a very broad sense of that audience. The more immediate thing, which the Congress immediately instructed them to do, was to make copies of the Declaration, and they made them that night, the night of July 4th, morning of July 5th. They printed what is called the Dunlap broadside. And the immediate target was they are to go to all the states, all the provincial legislatures, and to Washington and his armies in the field. So it was really to tell the domestic audience, we have declared independence, we are a nation, go forward.
Yeah. I recently read the Declaration aloud at an event here on Hillsdale's campus, and something struck me near the end, which is this audience question. There's a section that begins, "Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren." And so there's a paragraph here where they're addressing their fellow, at this point, the British citizens.
Right.
What are they saying to them? What do they feel is their, I guess, responsibility to address them in this document?
Yeah, that particular paragraph kind of threw me for a loop. Why is it there? It's actually not about the British brethren. They have appealed to them. They've sent them separate communications to the people of England. But that paragraph, when you read it, is really setting up a distinction between they've just renounced the king. He has done all these things, and now they turn, and there's reference to the British brethren. But that paragraph really is establishing a we they distinction. Hmm. So the movement of that paragraph really is really more about them,
okay,
meaning the Americans. We refer to them as our British brethren, which in a sense is that they are. We are literally brethren, but we're not the same people. We are a people.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, we're going our separate way. So it when you read it and read through it, it has the movement of the document is a slightly different story.
Uh-huh.
And so it doesn't seem to be a throw off. It actually serves a purpose, because once you've done this, once you've attacked the king, but before you formally declare your independence, what is the one thing you need to establish that's kind of implied from the very beginning, that the Americans have become and are a people, and as a people, they can declare their independence, and they can be a nation.
That's Dr. Matthew Spaulding. The book is The Making of the American Mind, The Story of Our Declaration of Independence. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Carl Bott and Ted Leidy. We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. Right here on Free Fire Radio.
Celebrate the holiday season at Red Ink Garden of Lights, open November 21st through January 4th at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay in Redding, California. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with over 2 million lights, plus holiday-themed music, food and drinks, glowing swings, and more. New for 2025, upgrade your experience with a train ride on the new Turtle Express, adorned with festive lights and wintry displays. Red Ink Garden of Lights is presented by Dignity Health Mercy Medical Center Redding. Buy tickets online at turtlebay.org.
Join me, Mark Levin, weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. KCNR, your talk radio.
Donald Trump is doing something that's never been done in American history. Now, what Trump is trying to do all at once, he wants to, what I call, reindustrialize America.
Mark Levin is on the radio.
KCNR, your talk radio.
This is Carrie Growl, owner of Organic Pilates. We believe movement is more than exercise. It's a way to connect with yourself. Our new student intro includes a semi-private reformer session, two group classes, and an infrared sauna experience. And soon, you'll find us in our expanded studio in the heart of downtown Reading. Discover how movement with intention can change the way you feel at Organic Pilates.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
It's holiday chaos at its finest. It's Have Yourself a Crazy Little Christmas by Colin Andrew Lonis and directed by Maureen Sanders and Ronda Albee. The tree isn't the only thing getting lit, and the family chaos makes fruitcake look stable. It's a festive fiasco of miscommunication, mischief, and merry mayhem. Perfect for anyone who thinks their own Christmas is a disaster. Running December 5th through 21st at the Riverfront Playhouse in downtown Reading. Sponsored by this station and these other pro-arts businesses.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu. We're talking with Dr. Matthew Spaulding, author of the new book, The Making of the American Mind, and also Vice President of Washington Operations and Dean of the Van Andel Graduate School of Government at Hillsdale in D.C. Dr. Spaulding, one of my favorite little parts in the book is when you note that the authors, Jefferson and others, they don't say, we have some opinions about things here.
Right.
They say, we hold truths to be self-evident. So why is that an important phrase?
Well, part of it is, you know, in this day and age, we have so much, all this language.
Right. This is my truth. Right?
That's right. there's none of that here. So on the one hand, we've heard these phrases a million times, but just think about it for a moment. We hold these truths to be self-evident. The first paragraph is kind of slow in the course of human events, and then boom. Jefferson is an excellent writer. He's using monosyllabic words and longer words. The effect
really good for broadcast, by the way.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
Yeah,
it's got an intensity to it. That's part of it. But what is the intensity? We hold these truths. You're right. They didn't say, we have some opinions. The British have their opinions. We have our values. They have values. This is not kind of moral neutrality. This is not subjectivism. This is not merely kind of consensus, you know, political. No. They're arguing. This is one of the radical ideas, meaning radical as in rootedness, radical ideas of the Declaration, which is, no, there are certain things that the human mind can actually know. There are fundamentals that can be known as truths. And of those truths, there are certain ones that we hold so dear because they are self-evident. If you understand the thing, you understand what we're talking about, which say it's a world of metaphysical freedom, which is, and that's the gift, if you will. That's the great accomplishment of the American founding, which we largely lost everything is value free. That's the moral relativism. That's not what they're talking about.
When it comes to rights and equality and slavery, you argue the Declaration contains the principle that would drive slavery toward extinction. So do we think this was intentional on behalf of the authors?
Slavery, of course, is one of the great confusions of American history, in particular the founding, in particular the Declaration and the Constitution. And it's deeply misunderstood and misused. Slavery was and is very barbaric. They all knew that. You really can't find in the writings of the founders a defense of slavery as such. If you know history, right, the defense of slavery comes up later in the 1830s and 40s. That is the antebellum South. But at the time of the founding, it was understood to be barbaric, and we don't like it. And they were generally of the opinion that it was going to go away. It was dying out. The economics of slavery were not that good. The cotton gin had been invented, among other things. So there was a clause in the Declaration, among the grievances that Jefferson wrote, condemning the king for imposing slavery on us. And then it kind of made some other observations about the British under wartime, condemning the British under wartime for freeing slaves. So it was kind of a very confused section that I think they took out primarily because it kind of made mixed signals. And two colonies said, I won't sign the Declaration if you put it in there. Having said that, they kept in the first of the self-evident truths, that all men are created equal. And they all knew what that meant. Did they free them immediately? No. It's actually not clear that they had the power to free them immediately. The Continental Congress had, almost immediately prior to the Declaration for a second time, outlawed the slave trade. So they were clearly conscious of the problem. The abolitionists later looked exactly to the human equality as the source of their abolition, or one of the sources of their political argument for abolitionism. So I think they actually put it there and left it there with the intention of ultimately undermining human slavery, which clearly is the movement going on. So, look, I think, yes, slavery was terrible. It's a messy history. It's an imperfect history. They had to put up with something that they would prefer, and we would all prefer historically was not there. But having said that, right, the beauty of it, the tale, really, going back to this idea of the story, is that a nation so divided, including abolitionists, but also pro-slavery figures who own slaves. The amazing thing here is they actually began their declaration by saying the first thing that is true and self-evident is that all men are created equal. That's dynamite.
There are any number of things or values that could have been mentioned in the Declaration of Independence specifically. And of course, they choose life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Why are those three things specifically named in the Declaration?
Yeah, I spend time on all three of them, both individually and then why those three in particular. So this is actually something that's always intrigued me. So, for instance, the right to property,
right,
which is a fundamental right, one could say is as much of a natural right as the others, is not mentioned, nor is religious liberty, which by all the founders was considered a fundamental right, indeed oftentimes referred to as a natural right. But they chose those three. Why? It goes into what they meant by what is life, what is liberty, what is the pursuit of happiness. So part of it is understanding which what each of the terms mean, and then how they go together. Mm. And the I think the short answer is that you need to think of the three as a whole, as you know, it's kind of, you know, life's the very definition of living, activity, birth, beginning, liberty, what we do as human beings, and the pursuit of happiness. Is it really a completion of life, if you will, both in terms of a general sense of that, right? A life well lived,
mm-hmm.
you know, having a family and maintaining your freedom and having, you know, your generations and investing well, whatever it might be. But then if you put it in theological terms, right, of course, you know, the pursuit of happiness means practicing your religious liberty in a way that comes to know, you know, the ultimate truth, which in a religious sense, particularly Christian sense, means once you've died, you will know the truth about God, and you will be blessed with the beatific vision. But you can read it different ways. I think they wrote it with that intention, but clearly open to this larger reading. But the three things are a whole: the beginning of life, the middle of life, and the end of life. It's the human. These are the rights that encompass humanity.
Talking with Dr. Matthew Spaulding, his book, The Making of the American Mind, and this discussion about whether we should refer to this as the American Revolution or the American Founding, and in particular inside The Making of the American Mind, the discussion or contrast, I guess, with the French Revolution,
right,
what the founders thought about the French Revolution.
There's several points at which I make a point of this, because we do normally refer to it as the American Revolution, but it clearly was not the French Revolution. And if you know anything about history, you know that they're very different,
uh-huh.
right? The American Revolution ends with a constitutional convention, which creates a constitution about the rule of law and one individual is elected to be president. It doesn't end with the guillotine and cutting people's heads off. And the general, in this case, in the French case, Napoleon, making war on the rest of the world. There's clearly a difference. So it is part, you know, there's some terminology. And so the reason of kind of bringing this question is to help make us think this through. The American Revolution, I suppose you could say it was a revolution in the sense that we threw off the previous regime, the British regime under England. But this kind of goes back to our distinction about twofold meaning of independence.
Mm-hmm.
They threw one thing off, but simultaneously they created another thing. So I would say the proper terminology is the American Founding, because that's the more important thing they did.
We'll return with one more segment with Dr. Matthew Spaulding, author of the brand new book, The Making of the American Mind. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Hey, it's Scott.
But join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. from my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, for North State Now, the first Thursday right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
What does comfort mean to you? At Alliance Heating and Air, we understand your HVAC system is the most important system in your home, affecting everything from air quality to temperature control. That's why everybody calls us, delivering perfect comfort. Invest in year-round comfort with an Alliance tune-up for just $99. Plus, we offer comprehensive maintenance plans starting at $15.95 per month. Remember, everybody calls us at 22-12-642.
Everybody calls us.
The holidays are here, and that means family, friends, and heartwarming homemade flavors.
Celebrate the season at Charlu's Tap House in Anderson, where tradition, taste, and togetherness come to life. Warm up with our made-from-scratch soups and signature family sauces crafted from cherished recipes passed down through generations. Watch the magic happen when we hand-toss every pizza to order, then bake it to perfection, crispy, cheesy, and made with love. Let the little ones explore our brand-new adventure room. With bounce houses, arcade games, and even a make-your-own pizza table where the kids can make their own pizza. While they play, you can relax with happy hour daily from 3 to 6, or pour your favorite brew from our self-serve beer wall featuring dozens of local and craft options. And don't forget the perfect stocking stuffer. Buy a $50 Charlu's gift card and get an extra $10 free. The gift of homemade flavor, family fun, and unforgettable memories. Visit charlus.com for details, or stop by on Highway 273 in Anderson. Charlu's Tap House, where good times, great flavor, and family traditions come together for the holidays.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew and this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Arturo Fuente, rare pink, happy ending. Extremely limited and rare, this is a perfecto in every sense of the word. A spicy Ecuadorian Habano wrapper, a Dominican binder, and luscious Nicaraguan Dominican filler. Offer up notes of oak, leather, cocoa, and spice. Proceeds from the sale of this cigar benefit breast cancer research. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Continuing our conversation with Dr. Matthew Spaulding, his book, available now, is The Making of the American Mind, the story of our Declaration of Independence. Dr. Spaulding.
I've been at Hillsdale 10 years now, and one word that I've heard more here than I did in my previous series, all combined, is the word prudence.
Right.
I've learned a lot about it, and I've learned a lot about it by reading your work. So for people out there who aren't around Hillsdale and don't hear this phrase prudence all the time, tell us what it means and what the role of prudence was in the reasoning of the Declaration.
Well, that's a great point, and I do make some reference, but also very important, emphasize that to a large extent because it is so important. The context of the Declaration itself. Again, go back and read it. Right, we know the famous phrase: "We hold these truths to be self-evident," and then it goes through four different things. Right, these rights which we've talked about. Governments are based on consent.
Mm-hmm.
And if a government does not uphold those rights, or doesn't secure these rights, people have a right to alter or abolish it and institute a new government. Those are the things that are self-evident. But then the very next word, the very next sentence, all of that previous part is one sentence. The very next sentence begins with one word: prudence. Prudence will dictate what to do. And I was like, that's kind of striking. And almost like, it's almost like a road bump.
Uh-huh.
I'm just getting warmed up. We're going, and all of a sudden, boom, prudence will dictate. It introduces this other concept. That's not by mistake. So prudence, I'm sure many people know and will recall, is one of the cardinal virtues, the great cardinal virtues, all classical history and Christian history for that matter. Wisdom, courage, moderation, prudence. Prudence plays the role, a very particular role, between things that are true simply, the things for which we seek wisdom. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily tell us what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Courage, which is a moderation of our, the proper use of our passions, if you will, and moderation, which is the moderation of our passions, needs something to help inform them. And that's the role of prudence, prudentia. And it's kind of this gateway, if you will, this bridge between principles, simply truths, and actual decision about what to do. What to do in the particular moment. Prudence is considered to be the virtue of statesmanship. It's the political virtue. And by reintroducing that word in the middle of the Declaration, that was clearly yeah. intentional and meaningful. As a matter of fact, there's a great debate at the Continental Congress between Dickinson and Adams about prudence.
Yep.
What's the prudent thing to do? That's we kind of read through it quickly. We don't get it. It tells me that the structure of the Declaration is actually a very classical structure. You begin by stating what is true. You end by actually declaring your independence.
Mm-hmm.
But in the middle, you gotta make your case. And the case is a prudential case. It's not obvious. It's not immediate. doesn't happen on its own. Got to make your case well. Yeah. It's grievances. It's long train of abuses. Prudence will dictate what to do.
So the grievance, this long grievance section inside the declaration, is it important to consider that grievance section on its own, in addition to seeing that the lines drawn from those grievances to the new government they want to set up in the Constitution?
The declaration, you remember this from school and class, or you look at it, right? We remember the first part, and then we quote the last part.
Yes.
But then there's this long section, indeed the longest part of the whole document, is the list of grievances. And there's this long list of grievances against the king. They are actually extremely important. So if you think of the declaration as a legal document, this is where the prosecutor, in this case the Continental Congress, is putting forward its case against the king. Well, they're crucially important. Indeed, they're so important that the English, what they responded to was actually the grievances, not the claim of all men being created equal. Uh-huh. They kind of say, oh, that's nonsense. But it's the grievances. And so I actually spent a whole chapter going through the grievances and thinking that through. And is there a pattern here? Because it just seems like a long list of things, some very familiar. You know, he's denied our consent for taxation. And then some very obscure that you're actually not even completely sure exactly what it refers to. And so I go through that and try to dig and find the history of each clause and what it means and what the grievances are. And then more generally, what's the pattern? And it kind of falls into three broad categories. Mm-hmm. One category is how the king has abused his power, meaning he has the power to do this, but he's abusing it. And then there's another list of the king's usurpations of power, which is to say that how he has essentially usurped the parliamentary power, the legislative power, which in turn is the American legislative power. How's he usurped legislative power under the kingship to do things? And then the last part is how he has basically gone to war against the American people. Among other things, we will famously recall hiring Hessian mercenaries, burning villages, capturing Americans on the high seas and making them fight in the British army. You know, he's kind of turned to the barbaric arts, if you will.
So we all know the beginning, we all know the end, and we'll conclude our conversation with the end, pledging lives, fortune, and sacred honor. How should we consider the way that the declaration ends?
Well, first of all, talk about a classic ending. It is probably, in my opinion, and actually in the opinion of many historians and others who have written about this, it's probably the most beautiful sentence in the whole declaration. It really is a powerful sentence. And I would suggest that that's the electricity, if you can imagine, reading it and getting to that ending. But the other thing we need to think about is how does that, it's clearly three things: lives, fortune, sacred honor. It's clearly meant to compare to life, right, liberty, the pursuit of happiness.
Yes.
But it's different. And so we want to think that through. And the other thing to think about is at the very end, it's now been identified who it is that's writing this declaration. They've already declared the independence, which say the act is already done. And they add this last sentence. And it's we, the representatives, it's the people in that room who is signing the document. They are pledging to each other. And then we're using the word our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And then, of course, the other thing that is electrifying there is it's just, again, Jefferson is wonderful with words, right? Our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. It's just boom. So it's really it's kind of a mic drop moment, yeah, that simultaneously introduces honor, which is a very powerful human motivator of high magnitude, but all honor that is sacred. Both in terms of religious sense of the word sacred is sacred before God, but also it makes the activity itself, the honorable thing of supporting this declaration itself, sacred. It raises it.
Yeah. So introducing honor, sacred honor here, underscores it's something much more important than what's going to happen tomorrow, or perhaps someone might benefit from the independence, financial concerns. All that is sort of wiped to the side, because it's much bigger and more important when you begin entering or begin inserting a phrase like that in the document.
No, that's true. And part of it is, again, go back and read it again. This is part of to refer back to my beginning about falling in love again. Mm-hmm. The story is a compelling story, and you have to understand they're writing this declaration. Literally, the declaration is being debated on the floor of the Continental Congress at precisely the same moment that English ships are arriving in New York Harbor. And so it's imminent. And it's a very powerful moment. And it's exactly at that moment that they pledge their lives, their fortunes, and their honor. The words here are not, these are not merely the rhetorical words of a Jefferson who writes and likes his language, although he's a beautiful writer.
Mm-hmm.
These are the words of a Continental Congress, of a bunch of men who then go on to fight in the Revolution, who are thinking about the things, the highest things, at precisely the most dangerous moment in their lives. And that makes it something that we oftentimes forget, which is why it's lovable.
Dr. Matthew Spaulding is Dean of the Van Andel Graduate School of Government at Hillsdale College and Vice President of Washington Operations, too. The brand new book is The Making of the American Mind, the story of our Declaration of Independence. Dr. Spaulding, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Matthew Spaulding, his book, The Making of the American Mind. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew and this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Arturo Fuente, Rare Pink, Happy Ending. Extremely limited and rare, this is a perfecto in every sense of the word. A spicy Ecuadorian Habano wrapper, a Dominican binder, and luscious Nicaraguan Dominican filler. Offer up notes of oak, leather, cocoa, and spice. Proceeds from the sale of this cigar benefit breast cancer research. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Introducing Jackpot Blitz, the industry's most advanced digital poker tape designed for players who crave the energy of live play. Seamlessly jump into live multi-table tournaments and make your moves with just a tap. No dealers, no delays, just pure poker. Hands are dealt instantly and side pots handled automatically. The pace, whoa, blazing fast. This isn't just the future of poker, it's happening now. Play smarter, play faster. Faster, play Jackpot Blitz. For complete details, visit WinRiver.com and find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with department staff with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is financial advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
Celebrate the holiday season at Redding Garden of Lights. Open on select dates now through January 4th at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with over 2 million lights. Plus holiday-themed music, food and drinks, glowing swings, model trains, and more. Upgrade your experience with a train ride on the new Turtle Express. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Dignity Health Mercy Medical Center Redding. Turtle Bay members save $5 per ticket. Buy tickets online for the best price at turtlebay.org.
This is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.